Much better. Thank you. So, welcome everyone. This is the May 25th meeting of the Women in the Economy Commission. Want to welcome all of you for attending, both guests and commissioners. I'm going to take a minute to ask Kathy. She's got an announcement or some information to share with us.
Thank you. I just want to let you guys know and introduce you to Shelly Allenson. You want to send that card?
Sure.
She's my new administrative assistant, and she's going to be taking over for Gail and supporting this commission moving forward. So we'll be able to get to know her better, and I'm excited to have her. She's here to save my life. So I need help.
I'm going to work on it.
Thank you. Well, and let me just take a moment to thank Gail. Thank you for all the work that you've done for the last 2 years of keeping us on the straight and narrow and rattling your chain when we don't get a response, and for your patience and diligence with us. So, Gail, thank you so much for your work with the commission. I just want to thank you. So, and I think I can speak for everybody on the commission and thank you. And Shelly, welcome. Thank you so much for your willingness to work with the commission. I'm sure that wasn't a choice. We hope we will make the experience as pleasant as we possibly can. And don't ever hesitate if you see ideas and things like that you could share with Kathy to honor our regard. And that's something that Gail's been great about, kind of keeping her eye open for things that would be of interest to the commission. So thank you. The first order of business that we have before is just to approve the minutes of Tuesday, March the 29th, which you have before you. And I don't know whether folks have had a chance to review them. I'll just take a couple minutes, give you a couple minutes to review. Just noticed one correction that will need to be made for a minute on page 206. There's a reference to connecting with Susan Cohen, and she spelled her name K-O-E-H-N. I forgot to let you know that, Gail. So K-O-E-H-N. So if you can just make that correction on the finalized in about 2 minutes. Does anybody else see any changes or corrections to the minutes that need to be made? All right. Hearing none, may I take a motion for adoption of the minutes? Motion. Motion by Co-Chair Edwards. Is there a second? Second by Commissioner Freegang. And also all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the minutes are adopted. Thank you, everyone. All right, our first order of business is a report on our lady signatures that were facilitated by Commissioner Barnett and the folks at the AFL-CIO, and I know that a couple of other circles make it, some folks from UWS had joined us, and we have one candidate that joined us, and I'm trying to think of someone else that was there that wasn't part of our group. anyway, I think it was a great turnout. Oh, Commissioner Robinson was able to join us for that one, so we had a couple of the commissioners there. So, Judy, tell us what we did.
Thank you.
Share what a great day that was for all of us.
Am I on?
Well, first of all, there were four commissioners, Ann and Jenny Robinson, and Melissa, and Rebecca, Commissioner Rebecca, and myself. I believe we had 12 join the tour. And we do this tour to our career centers and our apprenticeship programs, probably 2-3 times a month. We brought almost the entire Senate to each of the tours, and we're working right now on bringing a great deal of the ledge over to the tours so they can, when they bring up some silly little bills that they don't exactly understand how the process works, then we show them our career centers and they say, aha, now I understand, we already have the process. But I'm going to let a couple of the commissioners report on their experiences. Now, what I've passed out to you before they start to say their wonderful experiences of getting on big offering engineers' equipment and digging huge holes, I am giving you something that is very dear to my heart. It's called Construction Apprenticeship, the Other 4-Year Degree. Because often what we hear in the labor movement is, okay, Shelley decides to go to college. Well, and if that doesn't work out, maybe she can join an apprenticeship program or something. But it's not an alternative if Shelley really does not want to go to get her degree in a college or career or, like Salt Lake Community College or university. It should be offered as an option. And I think their experience, I can't speak for them, but I'm sure their experience in listening to the stories of the women. One of the women, of course, was a graduate of the Police Academy, I believe she said. And many of them came from higher learning. They've had their education and have chosen to go to this craft. And the stories, these women took time off from work and to make sure that each of you had a chance to understand what their journey and where they've been. So I just thank all of you. And I'm going to ask you, Liz, if you'll start and tell us what your experience was. You really had a good time. Thank you.
Thank you. I did have a really good time. It was really, really cool. I don't know who I'm speaking to.
The microphone.
So, it was a really neat experience. And I've worked in the technical trades and have seen construction and seen a lot of the technical training programs, and this was really neat, mostly because from my perspective, when I look at a workforce development perspective, I'm looking for how do people get access and what does it mean to them, how do we build that pipeline. And so what I thought was really intriguing was listening to the stories behind each of the individuals that did come and share their stories. And then my mind kept racing about how do we replicate that experience for other women, right? Because these jobs and the wages and the flexibility of schedules was really fascinating to hear how these women incorporated this work life and how they were balancing work and family at the same time. And so I thought that was a very fascinating conversation to be had, and that I watched, and of course I can completely see why they want to get up every day and go to work, because that was the other aspect of it, and that motivation piece. But a lot of these women were single moms, and that was really neat to hear how they were actually getting that work life balance, and the healthcare and wages and all of that. So it wasn't just a non-traditional trade, it was very accessible. And as long as people knew about it, and so that's where my mind was racing. So thank you very much. It was a really eye-opening experience from that perspective. So thank you.
Mr. Burkholder, your experience?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I'm going to. Yes.
Well, I didn't do any of the heavy lifting, but I did take a tour and was actually really delighted to see the quality of the training that was available to women in our state for skilled trades. And I think that our commission can play an important part as time goes by in being sure that young women who really would like to consider something other than a traditional college career understand what opportunities are available to them in alternative areas of life. So to be able to see firsthand what was going on, I think was very, very interesting. I don't think that I appreciated how much it took to become a flagger, for instance, on the highway. I had no idea that you had to train for that. And to have skilled work taken seriously and have access to that, I think it's really important for us to be able to do for young women and for young men. So thank you very much for this opportunity. I thought it was just fine.
Thank you. Can you hear Shannon's talk?
So, first of all, I want to thank the BWS folks over there. So, Commissioner Bowen, thanks for having some people there from the department. I think that that helps facilitate an understanding, and I saw some kind of, you know, that they were very intrigued by what they were learning, and I'm hoping that the information was helpful and that they'll be able to cascade that information outward to other locations and other staffers so that they know perhaps how to guide people that come in, that there are these options available to individuals in terms of a different pathway for education and certification. Some of the things that caught my eye that really resonated with me were, number one, the efforts by the trade unions to really make an ardent effort to recruit women, that to work through maybe systemic challenges that may have been present in the past and within these very more male-oriented in the past traditions, being very aware that the workplace may be a challenge for some of these women, and recognizing that and trying to facilitate a way to change the cultures within each of those different trades to be open to gender, more diverse representation gender-wise within their trades. The other thing that I think helped with that is, I forgot his name, the fellow that was with the typefitters, Bob. So when Bob was doing our tour, he was introducing us to the women that were there to speak to us and talk about their journeys of going through their apprenticeships. And I mean, these women are experts now in their trade. As he mentioned, that women welders are actually better in many cases than men. That the fine motor skills that are required for some of the welding that's required, especially in the areas of medical, where it has to be very, very clean welds, and there has to be a very high attention to detail in those types of welds, the integrity of what is done with that type of welding. In restaurants, you know, there's just some areas, that's some industries that require very, very particularly a finite types of welding and expertise, and that the women that he trains and that he knows that get sent and find that are identified as tops in their field, the welders are a lot of times women because they just have a way of being able to do this very effectively. So I thought that was heartening. Number one, that the trade realizes that they've got a bonus by seeking women who have a knack for this particular trade. The stories were amazing and compelling, and I'd love to take every one of those women and take them to the different schools, the high schools, and maybe present at the different, we talked about this a little bit, Commissioner Marina Fringang and I talked a bit about ways of getting this information out to the schools, to the counselors, to the teachers that can identify promising students in their classrooms that hey, this person, this young woman has a real knack for this, and let's see what we can do to get her on a trajectory if she's interested to pursue an apprenticeship. Because, for example, one of the young women talked about how she's always been interested in this. When she was in high school, she took shop, she took welding, she wanted to do this, and it's been kind of a very challenging journey for her because she had to break through the cultural barriers that she ran into, and the women taught, all of them spoke to it at some extent, with the pipefitters in particular, about when they were breaking into their fields, the hazing, for lack of a better way of putting it, that they experienced on the job site, where they were the ones that were given, they said, we get given the worst jobs to do. They always give us the stuff that nobody else wants to do, the hardest work, that we have to prove ourselves. And I think a lot of us can identify with that level of having to prove oneself in whatever tradition, whatever career path we take, we often encounter that if it's something that is traditionally male. And so it was interesting to hear what that experience was like for these women and how they made their way through it, and that they're very, they're just amazing, strong women, and how it was like the more that people put things in their way and more of the challenge that were given to them in terms of, well, let's make her do this job, that it was like they wanted to, yeah, let me show you how great I can do this job. And then that gave them the credentials and the portfolio that they could go to the next job. And now they're being requested. You know, now they can make their own destiny in terms of tailoring where they go, whether they accept a job or not, because they do make decent money and they're able to put money aside, and they know that they're covered with the health and et cetera. So if they don't want to do a job because it might be particularly dangerous or something that doesn't fit with their work-life balance, they can say, you know, I'm not going to do this one. Maybe I'll take the next one. But it's because of what they've built up foundationally so far in terms of being able to save their money because they are such well-paying jobs. So those are some of the things that really resonated with me, and I want to take these women on the road. I think we've already identified some for the website. Have we arranged for photos for some of the women that was ready for photos? Jenny's not here, so I don't know what. Have you? Okay. Because I think that their stories might be something we need to look into. I'll let Anne-Marie know as we move towards being additive with the website and adding new stories. The stories that some of these women told were very inspiring, and I think that they would be inspiring for other women who read them. So I want to make sure that we connect them with our communications committee so that we can use them maybe not just for the website, but for potential media coverage and media stories to talk about that. And I think that once that starts to get out, that will help address the concern that I have related to schools and the education system, knowing that this is a pathway that could be pursued by the young women that are in our schools. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that particular thing. Commissioner Bryant, thank you again so much for arranging for that. And I think we should just kind of make it an annual thing, and so that the folks who weren't able to join us this last time could join, and or let us know if you're doing them for other groups and when those might be, and then just kind of get the word out maybe through Shelley to the commissioners that this is another, you know, we're doing another tour if anybody's interested. And then that way, if people that weren't able to make it this last time could maybe make it another time and link in with other tour groups. So
thank you.
Thanks so much. Next on our agenda is the Utah Women's Wellbeing Initiative update. And we have Commissioner Burkholder and folks from the YWCA, Aaron, here to present on that subject. Thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity to be here this morning to talk about the Utah Women's Wellbeing Initiative. The YWCA in Utah has cared about women and girls in Utah very deeply since we were founded in Utah in 1906.
So the Utah Women's Wellbeing Initiative is all about strengthening the well-being of Utah women in key dimensions of their lives. And this is done through research and advocacy, collaboration, and education. And the history of the initiative really started in 1906, but we stepped up our efforts in the early 2000s, as we were looking at the future of the YWCA. So in 2013, we convened a group of key stakeholders to do state-level research on key dimensions of women's lives in Utah. And in 2014, we released the baseline research briefing, which many of you have. I have distributed this before to this group. And we formally announced the launch of the Utah Women's Wellbeing Initiative. And in 2016, we were able to formalize our public policy advocacy by the hiring of our first full-time director of public policy, who is Erin Jensen, next to me today, and we are delighted that she is here with us and focused exclusively on these issues related to Utah women. So the foundation of this is in the foundation of the work of the YWCA, and one of our most enduring beliefs is that better lives for women lead to stronger families, communities, and societies. And our vision is that all Utah women are thriving and leading the lives they choose with their strength benefiting their families and communities. So let me just go over a few areas, early accomplishments in the four strategic areas that I mentioned. And we will have handouts at the end, so you can take this with you. As I mentioned, we released the research briefing. We partnered with the Institute for Women's Policy Research in 2014. We were also the distribution contact for their 2015 Status of Women in the States report, which was released last year. We've been active in the research subcommittee with the Women in the Economy Commission, helped secure the Walmart grant for qualitative research, and we've been advocating for definitive research on women's educational attainment in Utah, which you heard a lot about at the last meeting. In the area of issue education, since the launch, we've held a series of stakeholder conversations to begin identifying policy gaps and priorities related to women's lives in Utah, and we've also been engaged in ongoing presentations and media interviews on a variety of topics, including the gender wage gap and women's political participation in Utah. In terms of collaboration, which is the third strategy of the initiative, we convened the Utah Network for Women and Girls, which is organizations throughout the state, both volunteer and professional organizations that are focused on the quality of life for women and girls in our state. We've been doing ongoing outreach to community partners, key stakeholders, and engaging diverse allies in this work. Public policy advocacy, the fourth strategy. This will really be stepping up now that Erin is here, but the work of the initiative will be to analyze the potential impact of proposed legislation and regulations in state agencies as they may affect women and girls in Utah, and will have a particular focus because of the YWCA's mission on the impact on women and girls of color. So looking at key legislation and appropriations efforts that will advance the well-being of women and girls. And we will be convening meetings and conferences that will focus on policy related to Utah women and girls and provide that expertise as time goes by. Looking at some of the specific dimensions, the status of women in Utah, we have seen a lot of this news in the past few years, but these rankings come from the Institute for Women's Policy Research in their 2015 rankings. And the interesting thing about looking at their research is that they actually do it every 10 years. So they've identified a number of different areas, and in all of those areas, with one exception, which they didn't deal with, our rankings have gone down slightly in the past 10 years. And they also do a regional ranking. So you can see that in terms of women's health and well-being, for example, Utah is number one in our region. And in some of the areas, we are not. And these are composite scores, and there are a lot of things that go into that. But it's sort of where it is that we begin in some of the issues of women's lives. One of those areas is employment and earnings. Yes.
Can I take a picture of that? I need that.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely. Sort of depressing.
And actually, if you'll send, I would love to have this presentation sent to all of us. So if you could give your reply all to all the commissioners with a copy of the...
Yeah, we will.
Be very helpful.
And we'll give you a hard copy to
right.
We'll send it in digital form as well.
Right, thank you.
Sure. You want to... Flip the slide and we'll start talking about employment and earnings. This is actually great news, and I'm sorry Anne-Marie isn't here, but she knows all of this. But the American Express Open Report for this year ranked us ninth for growth trends in women-owned businesses. And our women-owned businesses in this state jumped more than 36% between 2007 and 2015. So when we get to the policy implications, and ways in which we might move forward collectively on behalf of women, there will be something related to this. We're all very familiar with the gender wage gap. There's been a lot of press about that. 70% earnings ratio. This is really, this is an important point for us, and I think for us as a commission. The gender wage gap, when you're a woman of color, is even wider, and it varies among the ethnic and racial groups. Women in Utah continue to earn less than men, even if they have achieved higher educational levels, which doesn't mean that women shouldn't become as educated as they can be. But discouragingly, there's still the gap. Utah has the highest percentage of employed women who work part-time. That's a little over 40%. So that's the highest in the country. So this sometimes has an impact on the benefits that women receive, and that's worth taking a closer look at. And women are less than one quarter of all STEM workers in Utah. Well, when you look for policy opportunities in those areas, well, we certainly want to continue reducing barriers for women-owned and operated businesses and look at incentives for them to create businesses. And a couple of pieces of legislation, Senator Henderson's and Senator Escamilla's legislation this past year, is helping in that area. We want to support women and girls who are pursuing non-traditional fields of study and work, and ensure Title IX compliance in the STEM fields at higher education institutions. These are just some of the opportunities that I think all of us who care about these issues have to pursue. In terms of economic stability, a little over 13.5% of women in Utah lived in families with incomes below the federal poverty line, and that was actually a slight increase over the previous year for those data. In terms of poverty rates, Hispanic women were more than twice as likely as white women to be poor, and Native American women in our state have the highest poverty rate. And this is actually the case all over the country. And that's something that I don't hear very much attention paid to. And single working women, or single women, heads of households, nearly 4 in 10 families, were poor. And I think it's important to remember that single women include women forced from their homes and displaced from their homes by domestic violence, for example. They're in that category of single women. But they may be women who were married, had homes, and had to leave because of violence. And more than 13% of women in Utah live with a person with a disability. So let's move to the policy opportunities, because they are linked with some of the facts about women's lives in our state. our minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, but the average, the housing wage for Utah to afford a two-bedroom apartment at fair market rent is $16.32 an hour. So we begin to see how difficult it is for families where there are minimum wage workers to have affordable housing, which has a ripple effect on communities. There are groups that are exploring the state-based earned income tax credit. Of course, there's a federal credit. There are efforts underway to look at paid family leave for FMLA-related issues. Not all workers, even regular workers, have paid sick days, and that's really important for caregiving. And then there are workers in a broader caregiving responsibilities. They could be for a small child or a disabled person in their family or an elder. Affordable child care is something that we know for working women, for women who need or want to work. This is a huge issue for them. And for older women whose working careers have been interrupted or whose wages were low because of gender wage gaps, this actually has an impact on their Social Security earnings. When they begin to receive Social Security, that Utah is one of the states that taxes income on Social Security. So we haven't taken a close look at this yet, but I think that this is something that we need to look at because women still live longer than men. And I think we need to see what we're doing that is putting barriers in the way of economic stability for elderly women.
And before you continue,
I have a question to ask.
Yes.
I think that's in your hand, so you might know the answer to this. I'm thinking that, did Senator Wyler run legislation to try to deal with this issue, and how far did that go, or where are we at with
we
that?
We killed it in committee.
Oh.
With that Social Security.
Certainly it's something that we can, it was a really big policy change
right.
that was thrown at us in the middle of a session, and it didn't go anywhere, but it's certainly something that we can look at. And of course, we try to maintain the broad-based low rate
right.
principle and tax policy in the state of Utah, but certainly something that if it were to happen would need more information, more education on this particular topic, and I am open
mm-hmm.
to looking at that.
Yeah,
I know that he actually came.
It was, I think, last year.
It was a couple of years because I remember
yeah.
when I used to serve on road tax during the interim. He came and kind of floated the idea, and then tried to run it, but I didn't even know what had happened from that. And I know he didn't pass it. I just
it just leaked out
into my brain. Okay.
Well, maybe
we'll
enjoy that.
That's something that we're really interested in taking a closer look at.
Okay.
Right. Because I think it affects much older women. And we just need to discuss
I think maybe having some of those issues, that information in front of us might assist if people understand that it's the issue of getting, you know, kind of all of the different variables that affect women in particular, that they live longer. And then if they're earning less, but yet they're earning longer, then they're particularly challenged by the taxes on it.
Well, again, this is a big policy change, and it would cost a significant amount of money. And so it's one of those things that would require some interim committee hearings and interim support rather than just throwing it out.
Right.
And
sure.
A legislative session.
We won't do that. That's not the way we plan to work. But we really are getting this underway in a formal sense. So we'll be doing some study on some of these issues.
And
I'm not sure that presenting this is what we're going to do in the
I just knew that we had started to explore that and was kind of wondering what trying to remind myself what happened to it, and then maybe a conversation with Senator Wyler to see where he's
to remind everybody, 100% of income tax revenue funds education.
And
we have people all the time coming to us wanting a tax credit for this or that, and so it is just something to think about when you're working on
that.
Yeah. I think that the initial work is simply to understand it better.
Yeah.
and to understand what the trade-offs have been in other states that don't have a tax, and just educate ourselves about that. There may not be anything that we can do or should do even, but it's an area that there is a disparate impact because of gender, and I think it's worth taking a look at.
Before you continue, I'll just also give the chair's prerogative to talk a little bit, we'll go into a bit more depth when we do our presentation from our subcommittee on policy. But the EITC issue is something that we've had discussions about within the policy group that we see as an opportunity to discuss the issues with disability, people that are caring for a disabled family member, and caregiving. That's another area we're going to look into. And then one of the things I wanted to point out when you were mentioning the increase of women-owned businesses in this state. Nationally, what we're seeing is Latinas do that to, I think, three times the number than other than there is in the traditional workforce. So you're seeing Latinas in particular, because of that enormous wage gap in our demographic sector, are finding as their solution to start their own businesses. So they're between, I think, 2010 and 2012, the highest number of women-owned businesses were started by Latinas. So it's just kind of interesting to see what happens within a demographic when it's adversely affected one way or another, and how women are finding solutions, and this is the direction that they're going. So that's an issue that I'm really interested in, is trying to figure out, so what are those things related to regulatory issues, training, licensing, that might in particular be augmented by either a language or a cultural barrier. And I know that Salt Lake County is doing a Welcoming America, Welcoming Utah initiative to engage refugee and immigrant individuals. But I, within that universe, I want to see how that affects women, and as you mentioned, women of color, and what we can be doing policy-wise and community-wise to really take down those barriers, because if they're interested and we're getting this major interest of women of color in particular, and the minorities wanting to start the businesses, what are those barriers that we take down to make that happen? So just a couple of things, we'll talk about it further, but I wanted to bring it up because when it fits into the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you very much for that. Education is something that we have taken a look at here. So these stats are familiar to you. Women in Utah are less likely than their male counterparts to have a bachelor's degree or higher. That's a combined category. Graduation rates, we know, are about 10 percentage points lower than the national rate. And the number of Hispanic women in Utah with a bachelor's degree or higher was less than half of women if you looked at all of the other groups. So that's part of the opportunity that we have in the area of education that you looked at last time, which is to be sure that we have an accurate way and a comprehensive way of really understanding women's educational attainment in our state. And that's the effort underway to do that. Other policy opportunities, there may be support incentives to help Utah women complete post-secondary education. Salt Lake Community College recently took such an interesting initiative in terms of the Pell Grants. If students already qualify for Pell Grants, they will help them get through, they will cover those for their expenses, and they have to be full-time students. So it's a wonderful incentive for low-income students to finish their education. And there may be ways to expand that throughout the educational system. And then, of course, more on STEM. So we don't need to talk about that again. Health and safety. We have a high female suicide rate in our state. Our infant mortality rate is 4.9, but for black women, their rates are almost 2.5 times higher. So what's that all about, and what can we do to help prevent that?
And just to add to the Health Disparities Council has been working on issues related to this, And actually, within the Pacific Islander community, their numbers are higher even than African
Americans.
I mean, they're both, those are our two populations where we see the highest incidence of infant mortality. But we may want to, and maybe this is just an offline discussion, but you may want to connect with the Office of Health Disparities with the Department of Health, because they've been doing actually some amazing outreach and education activities with African American women within the churches and with Pacific Islanders within their traditional churches to educate women on prenatal health, et cetera, like that, to help prevent that. And we've got a couple of comments. Commissioner Henderson.
Thank you. So this is something that we were going to talk about at the end, and I won't go into detail, but on this infant mortality rate issue, there is an initiative that Senator Escamilla and I are really, really excited about talking to you guys about, and we've been already working on a lot of things in regards to this, but a lot of the problem is co-sleeping. So co-sleeping is one of the biggest causes of infant death, suffocation, and there are a lot of times when women have babies and they don't have a crib for their baby. Either they have another little child at home already using the crib, or they just can't afford one or whatever, and so these babies go home and they sleep in their mom's bed. And so there is an initiative, and I can take it for later if you want, that we're working on, we're really, really excited about, and would love to get the commission on board.
Super. And I know that Senator Escamilla, I want to give you a part of that conversation. Yeah, so thank you for bringing it up to remind me.
I'll love
it. And keep an eye on when she walks in, we'll let you two present that idea. So Commissioner Sweetin.
Yes, I just had a question. What is the suicide rate?
Do you have that number?
Sorry. I don't have the actual number with me, but I can get it for you.
Great, thank you.
Health insurance, we need better data about this since the Affordable Care Act passed, but EPA indicated that Hispanic women were the least likely group to have health insurance coverage. And then, of course, we know the one in three statistics about violence. So policy opportunities, we won't talk about Medicaid expansion. That's really something that people talk about a lot. We're interested in the idea of having trained community health workers, which is actually what you were talking about, Representative Chavez Park. We'd like to take a closer look at how we can provide unemployment insurance benefits to domestic violence victims who may need to be absent from work or lose their jobs. So we really want to look, and this would be in partnership with DWS, to see what protection provisions there are in place in the workforce for domestic violence victims, because, of course, there's an impact on their work they are in situations like this. And political participation and leadership, I think these are also really familiar to you in terms of Utah women registering and voting at higher levels than men, but we still rank in the bottom 10 states for this. The legislators you see in this room are many of the legislators in our state legislature, and we don't have any statewide executive positions. So what we need to do is to continue providing networking and training, which is a policy and program, increase institutional resources, of which this is one, and support opportunities to increase access to the ballot. So the second way to the ballot that was crafted as a compromise is one way to help more qualified women get to the ballot. So these are general areas, and again, because of our mission, we will be looking at disparities in all of these areas, advocating to reduce systemic barriers and becoming a trusted ally in collaborations that are trying to be inclusive and welcoming of communities of color across the state. So that gives you a sense of what the Utah Women's Wellbeing Initiative is all about, what our key strategies are, some of the things that we've been able to do, in the past couple of years, some of the areas that we're going to be taking a look at, and because our work really dovetails beautifully with some of the areas that the Women in the Economy Commission is looking at, we really look forward to identifying opportunities where we can support what the Commission is doing and then carry forward work on our own and with other groups. So thank you again for this opportunity to bring you up to date.
Super. Do we have any other questions or comments? Commissioner, I want to, again, I would strongly encourage you or Aaron to connect with the Office of Health Disparities with the state, because a lot of the research that they're doing and or the activities that they're doing really target what you've identified as policy levers that need to be addressed within the area of health. And then also possibly related to the suicide point, there's a state suicide prevention task force with the Department of Human Services, and maybe link up with them there. The Office of Health Disparities does have a council, and let's just chat offline to see if maybe we can get a representative from the YWCA appointed to that group, because, again, a lot of what they're working on, there's a lot of a cross-pollination here that I think that could occur in terms of what you're finding out, the populations with whom you interface, and what the Department of Health is trying to do to address these challenges that you're seeing, but that they're also seeing. So just, I could see some connectivity that can really, that could happen given what you identify as good policy levers that they're trying to move in that same direction. Great stuff, and I think this is great because we just had our policy subcommittee meet earlier this week, and there's a lot of alignment occurring here for what things that we're identifying as key issues, and then what you've already identified too. But that's great.
And I think that alignment over time with groups will actually create some synergy and some ability to make genuine change in the state for women. So that's very exciting.
Thank you. I have a question. Are you on your policy pieces here for each of the areas, policy opportunities, are you actively seeking sponsors and having discussions with legislators about these issues, or are you, as you just said, synergy, are you hoping to collaborate with folks who are already sort of interested in maybe working on this issue?
A combination. So really the policy opportunities were simply those sorts of things that come from the facts that we know about Utah women's lives. The YWCA alone is not going to take on all of that. It was really a broad picture of where women in our state are and the sorts of things that might help their lives be better. And so we will be working in collaboration, of course, with this commission and other groups, as well as introducing legislation ourselves. That's my first time.
Great. Thank you.
I was thinking of, I'm sorry, I just caught all of this stuff in my head. So the other thing that I was thinking about related to, not so much the suicide point, but I remember when you first came out with the report, another thing that you were identified, that you had identified was the amount of women that were being prescribed opioids related to birth when they're giving birth, or I mean like with cesarean sections, and that there's, for some reason, women are prescribed a lot of opioids just within the process of their medical care. And I'm wondering, because the Health and Human Services Interim Committee is focusing on opioid use and things, again, policy levers, things that we can take to prevent the challenges that our state and actually nationally we're facing in terms of such an exponential challenge with substance abuse related to opioids. I'm thinking that's an interesting little variable there, that it's women that are being prescribed this, and then this issue of, you know, it being a challenge for our state. So, again, offline, let's kind of chat about a way to maybe start to tie those threads together as we're exploring. I mean, I don't know what the answer would be to that, and it seems to me more to be in the area of scope of practice with physicians that are working with these women. But since I guess what I'm getting at is that the Health and Human Services Committee is focusing on policy letters related to making an impact on opioid use in our state, and this is a specific problem that's identified within women that's, that are getting health care. Might be something we might want to tease into. So anyway,
great.
Help me track that if you wouldn't mind. That's okay. Thank you. Any other comments? All right, great report. Thanks always for your work. Commissioner Brookholder and team from YWCA. Welcome, Erin. I'm so glad that we're going to be able to have your expertise as, you know, in helping us both with our subcommittee work and with the commission's work. Appreciate that. In fact, I don't know, did you get a chance to introduce Erin in terms of her background? Did we do that at all?
Well, I think Erin should
introduce herself. Yes, I was going to say, Erin, let's take a quick minute. Yes, I was thinking, I could remember when you introduced her, whether we got to know. Why should this girl know YWCA? Why we're so lucky to have her as part of the team?
Sure. So, again, my name is Erin Jemison, and I'm about 6 weeks into the position now, so I'm a relatively new resident of the state of Utah. I spent the last year here as the manager of the Federal AmeriCorps Grant Program with the Utah Commission on Service and Volunteerism, so that's where I lived before transitioning to the YWCA, and before that I was the executive director of the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault for about 6 years in Colorado, obviously. And so we, very similar organization to the Utah Coalition here, and a lot of our work was around public policy for victims and survivors of sexual assault, holding offenders appropriately accountable, et cetera. We were really able to make some good progress legislatively in Colorado on those issues, specifically around sex offender treatment and supervision. So a lot of my policy experience was around those issues, which are not easy. So I'm excited to bring some of my experience in working on difficult issues and incremental change here to Utah around larger issues around impacts of different policy issues on women's lives. It's definitely an interest and a passion of mine. I did my graduate work around the gender wage gap and policy solutions around that. So I'm excited to be here.
I'm so lucky. Thank you again, Commissioner, for bringing Erin to Utah. Erin, welcome, and we look forward to our continued work with you. A couple of things I did want to mention as we were starting the meeting, and I forgot to mention that Commissioner Robertson has sent an email to us saying that she may not be able to make it, so she is excused. She was hoping to be here, but mom's wife, she's had an appointment with her daughter that she needed to attend to. And then Senator Escamilla will hopefully be here before the end of our meeting. She had a previous meeting that ran a frontage with our commission meeting that she chairs, but hopefully she'll be here soon. If not, Commissioner Anderson, I know that you need to leave a little bit early, so let me know before you need to leave, and then I'll have you talk about your proposal if she's not here yet. And thank you for allowing us to ask you to come up and back up. We do have a presentation from our amazing women, Maria and Sarah, have been helping with us with the website for our Women Economy Commission. So we'll have them come up and give us where we're at.
Are they both active or is it just the one?
It sounds like the one.
Okay.
The mics are both
active. Okay. So I'm Maria. I'm a business analyst with Utah Interactive.
You need to get really
No, you're on.
Oh, there you are.
Okay. I think I just didn't have it close enough to my
mouth.
So I'm Maria with Utah Interactive. I'm a business analyst there. And then
Hello, Commission. Sarah Watts with Utah Interactive. And we want to thank you for letting us come and show you a quick update of the website. And Maria's done the work on it. So I'm just here to watch the website. But wanted to give you a quick update on it. We feel like it's probably about 80% of the way there, and we're just moving along at your pace. If you want to move quicker, we can do that. We'd be happy to get it out, rolled out for you as soon as possible. Basically, we've got the format of the website decided upon by you, colors on the website decided upon, and we have a good majority of the content, but not all the content we need. So the content that we do have is in the website, but we would like you at this point to look at the content that's there, and that includes pictures. take a close look at those and make sure that they represent what you want them to represent. And the more you take a look at that content, the better we can make the site. So Maria is showing it to you right now. If we start up at the top, you'll see we have a stock image background there, and we'll buy that and put it in, but we wanted to make sure it was something that you like. And we've got a banner image there that is one of the images you gave us. If you would like us to replace that with anything, we're happy to do that. Really, it's there as a placeholder. And then you can see where we put in your content just below that. And
we have a comment.
Okay.
Hi, Jean Barnett. I have a comment on the picture. Can you go back to the photo? Although I'm from the non-traditional jobs, I like the photo, but I think it'd be appropriate to have, for diversity, to have someone in a suit, a woman dressed for a professional. And I like, you know, the casualness of some of these photos, but, and it's very diverse, but I don't know if this gal next to the red shirt is Caucasian. So I'm not sure.
We couldn't agree more. We used the pictures we received.
Okay, so you asked, so I
yes.
gave you the comment.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
It's probably not the best choice of pictures.
Okay.
It was the best from what we received.
Okay.
Well, and then do you have a question? I thought that Jimmy, and I wish you were here.
Yeah,
Commissioner.
Sure, yeah.
I wish Commissioner Robinson were here, because I thought part of what was we were going to arrange, she had arranged for a photographer to meet up with some folks, and we were going to be given her suggested business owners, workers, that, and that it was my understanding that we gave her people to go take pictures of, like, in their workplace, and that those pictures that she had arranged for the photographer, so we'll need to circle back with her on that.
Well, I can speak to that. So I've been working a lot with Anne-Marie. With Anne-Marie.
Oh, okay.
About that, and I know we kind of met Senator Robinson in the hallway, and she had communicated that to us the last time we met. And I know that with the Learning Center, there were some photos that were sent over, because I really like the idea that you had, Representative, that, you know, telling the story of a particular woman in that realm of the Learning Center. And we have some of those photos, but they just didn't work with the layout that we had chosen for the website. So we had a few of the Learning Center photos, but I would say, you know, the feedback of having, you know, a woman in a suit. And it sounds like Senator Robinson is going to kind of take that on, and she's going to go forward with that.
Okay.
I know that we do want the website to, if we can, have it launched by July 1st.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'll probably have to talk with her on that.
And I guess for me, where I'm at is, in terms of the images, I'm fine with something like this as a placeholder so we can launch. I'm more concerned about the content and getting that finalized, which I know part of this has been our problem, but at some point, we're just going to say, go with what you got, and we're going to update as we go through it just so we can launch it. But I think that especially after what we saw at the center in terms of the possibility of maybe getting the photographer out to the workplaces, I guess what I'm trying to look for is something that is more dynamic in terms of the pictures. So it's not just, I mean, this is a wonderful photo, but in terms of women in their workspace, what they're doing, so that they're more active and more dynamic in terms of what we're seeing in terms of images. So great for placeholders. I like the use that's here, but I think that we just need to work on giving you a better portfolio of additional photos. But the more dynamic it is, that's kind of what we're looking for. But I know it's a two-way street in terms of us getting stuff to use too. So
we agree. We would love to get some more representative images of really the effort that you are putting into this commission and what it means to women in Utah. So love to see those photos. We'll put them in. And then as you scroll down, you'll see...
Can I just make one question?
There's a couple of comments.
Sure. And I love the discussion. I think representative is critical. And I think the reason why is so authentic, right? Because when I look at this, I don't want anybody looking at this website, if you will, saying, oh, well, they put that picture on and make us think they're one way, when when it should be representative and very authentic to the work that we are doing.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, go ahead, Sarah. Thank you.
So the content that we've been given is also below. You'll see it here. I would suggest that maybe it's pared down a little, that you look at that and decide if you need to have all of that information on the homepage. People generally will read three words. That's in studies what they say people do on a website. So you've got about three words to capture people in a header and then maybe a sentence like that. So as you look at the content, think about paring it down to make it look better on the site. And then as we scroll down, these really, again, are placeholders for your research policy resources and in the news areas, and the images that you want to put there and the content that you want to put there as well. So the site essentially is built out. There is a really good framework for building something. The colors are there that you've chosen, and the logo's finished and on the site. And it's organized, at least according to the way that you wanted the content organized, but we're at a point where we can get this done really quickly if we can, you know, get the content needed, and we'll get it updated and ready to launch for you.
So I thought that, okay, so I'd like for the policy discussion, do we have that? Because I thought I had sent the updated.
Yes, there is content on each one of these tabs, so you can look at this. And these tabs are a good place to put more content. So you can go beyond, you know, a sentence and three words, of course, in these areas. And these are good places to put links to reports and legislation and as well.
Commissioner Barnett,
just can you click it? What is about? Can you click over to about? I know I can get online. And where would the each of us were to submit a picture and a little something about us? Is that on here somewhere?
So that section, we didn't put that on the about us. Anne-Marie and I, when we were talking, and with Jenny Robinson, I realized she's not representative, that I think each subcommittee area, they wanted to do a little bio and then a picture. So to kind of represent that, if we look at the research page, we have the subcommittee members, and then we just don't have the photos. So that is something we still need, are the photos of each of the subcommittee members. And so here we have, I think these are all of the members for research. And I encourage you, we're scrolling through this, but you can see the URL. If you want to pull out a tablet or a phone or record that, you can look at that URL. And I'd encourage you to look on your phone and your tablet, too, to kind of see how the website's going to look, because most people are using their phones and tablets to look at websites, too.
Okay. Commissioner Henderson has a question as well.
Just a really fast one comment. I think it makes sense to have the names, at least, of the commission members on your About Us page. I mean, that's where people go to find out who's on this commission, and I think that makes sense. And I love that you've got the policy subgroups for people who aren't on the commission officially, but they're helping with these subgroup or the different subcommittees. I love that you have their contact information or their little bio or something there. That's great. But I think that the About Us should be easy to find. Who all is actually on this commission and who appointed us, and maybe even how long our appointment is.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because since we're appointed by the governor, and a lot of the members that serve on the subcommittees aren't necessarily commissioners, but I do want people to know that we're not just including voices from the commission, but I think distinctively within the About Us page, we need to have the commissioners. They're just kind of copy what we've got in terms of their bio and the link to that page, if we would please.
And I think that'd be great. So I would say look at the website and kind of decide where you want that on the About Us section, and we can do that. As you look through the website, and what I can do is I can also send out an email to everyone with the URL as well, if that would be easier. And just kind of look through, we have, kind of how Sarah said, we have the site probably pretty close to being finished, but there are a lot of areas that, or not a lot, there are a few areas that we still need some additional content, or maybe organization.
So on the home page where you've got those placeholders for each of the areas, I had thought that it would be, like, for example, the first paragraph of the, so let's take a look. Let's consider policy. So the placeholder, does the placeholder have, like, a picture and then a description? Is that what you're thinking? Okay. And so what I was thinking of the description is maybe, again, synthesized, maybe just a one sentence, pulling from the policy page, you know what I'm saying, the first paragraph. And we can definitely cut down that very, very, very big first paragraph at the top that talks about the commission as a whole. I would, if you want to scroll back up, I would think maybe the middle sentence is the one that synthesizes everything. So the Living Economy Commission has been established in part to identify and recommend implementation of specific policies, procedures, and programs that respond and write blah, blah, blah. So that would be the commission's definition. It would be my recommendation. And then maybe that first sentence, that would what we could use for the policy placeholder small description. And maybe even smaller, we could just say, you know, we can come up with something. But I agree with you, that is way too big. And I was worried about that, but I thought, well, let's throw that out there. But yeah, it is way too big.
Yeah,
they're very similar. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It helps to see it on a website.
Yeah, it does. I mean, like, it's harder for us when you just say, give us something, and then I patent it. Now that I can see it, I'm
obviously, exactly.
There's a lot more that we could do with that. The other question that I have is, let's go back to the policy page again. And, you know, scroll down, about us. So what I was wondering, to help kind of make it not look so copy-heavy, but still add things like the list of the commissioners, the guiding principles, and what was the other thing that's on here, call to action, is that can those be sub-pages, can those be linked to another page instead of having everything on this page? My recommendation would be the beginning part of the about us is all that's on that page, and then the rest, you've got the link to help them, I think would be perfect. And then additional links to different pages that one is, you know, a link to a guiding principles page, another is a link to the call to action page, and then another one would be a link to the list of commissioners. So it doesn't look so copy heavy on this, but when you're looking about us, it's a sub page for that. So that would give them the information. So.
That's a great recommendation.
Yeah, kind of like, oh, this is like on the research page, you've got that kind of like that where there are links that we look at research. That's more of what I would look like at the about page with each of those other things with the call to action and things like big links instead.
Gotcha.
That would be my recommendation anyway. And everybody's welcome to weigh in. Melissa, I mean, Commissioner Friedman, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, just a general comment. And I know you're still have 20% of you, but just a general comment about the logo, whether it's with the actual title of the committee or not, but maybe a way to continue to brand that and position you is to have that recurring somehow in a very appropriate way to put out the website.
Icon itself, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
really what I like.
So, one moment, sorry, Commissioner. Mm-hmm. Edwards has a question.
Thank you for all of your work you've done on this, and I know we have sometimes been the dragging our feet and making it difficult for you to sort of complete this project. I'm wondering if, I mean, so clearly you have the technical expertise and you're doing all the technical stuff here, but I'm wondering, do you also have the skill set to do some kind of copy editing? So when you're saying to us on the home page, the, you know, that huge chunk of text there, you're waiting for us to hone that down. I'm wondering if you could actually hone that down for us from your perspective, what as a reader seems like the most important, because you are, sometimes we're too attached to our words and our concepts and we can't give up our baby. And so as someone who is relatively aware of what we're doing, has, you know, moderate awareness here, and I'm wondering if we could enlist your assistance, is what I'm saying, and you could make some edits and then push them back to us, and we could say, wow, why didn't we think of that? That's awesome. I think that if that is possible to do, this process would go a lot quicker,
yeah.
Because I know that, and I speak with my own guilt here, I know that there have been lots of opportunities where I have had emails coming my way saying, please edit this, please look at this. And I always think, oh, this deserves my best attention. I'm going to save a special little spot tonight when I'm going to do this. And then it never gets done. And then, you know, months go by. So is that possible that you could?
I'll answer for Maria. We can do that. We have somebody on staff that does it for us.
Yeah.
I will warn you that, I guess it's not a warning, it's just we typically do not provide content for a website because it is supposed to be, you know, your website, your mission, your words, and we don't want to take really, I wouldn't say liability, but we don't want, it is a huge responsibility to be the communicator of what you are trying to say. So we'll do it and hope that you don't take offense to what we're trying to do. But we would ask that you then look at it even more heavily than you would look at your own copy.
I think it's easier for us to edit recommended copy versus us to offer.
Okay.
And then realize that, oh my gosh, yes, what I did use was way too long. And it was repetitive because it's hard for us to envision it when we see it here, whereas once you pop it in there, it's like, oh my gosh, look how much copy she gave. It's just kind of, I don't think I would take offense if you figured out a way to make it, edit it. I mean, the way we look at it is we give you who we are and you have the expertise to help us summarize that or make it smaller or make it work for a visual for this media, because a lot of it is we're not the experts with the media, with this particular media form. You are, and we respect that. So I think it's easier for us to throw that back at us and we can say, yeah, that works, or just add this one word or take this out. I just think it's easier to edit versus us to give you a bunch of stuff and then it just doesn't work. So.
Well, and let me, I did work with Anne-Marie a lot, and maybe this is what we can do is I can work a lot more since I have that relationship with her and we've been working, because with About Us, she and I kind of drafted it together.
Right.
So I gave her suggestions as she was drafting it. She mostly did the work because, again, we don't want to put the content on the site, but I gave her some ideas, and I said, you know, if you do more than one or two sentences, even for the guiding principles, people aren't going to read it. So, you know, if you can really make it concise and clear, that would be ideal. So we've kind of been collaborating that way, so maybe we can just...
I would just invite you to continue to do that, because I think that's the easiest thing for us, just because of our bandwidth. And we do want to get this done. We want to respect the time that you're putting into this too. So making it the best and most efficient way to get it done, I think would be my recommendation.
So all I'm saying is we will do that for you. We will do that. I would ask that you then look at it very, very critically and closely to make sure that it's everything that you want, because it will be, at that point, written by us, but we're telling everyone it's written by you, so.
Well, technically, we're giving you we're just asking you to edit.
Okay, and I'm coming from, we've been doing this for 14 years here. There have been issues in the past, and with copy and information that goes on a website, and we're just asking, please, that you critically look at it because it will be your content.
And I think what we would get to you is the fact that now that we're asking you that, we own the fact that we've asked you to do that,
okay.
And we take responsibility for if you ask us, like I often tell people whenever I send out information for them to approve, if I don't hear from you, I'm assuming you're approving it. And I always put that at the bottom of my email because then that kind of releases me from the responsibility that I've given it back to you, I mean, other person, not you, and you know, if I don't hear from you, I'm assuming you're okay with this. So, and since that's the way we operate, I think that we'll take that into consideration that we've asked you to do that and take it upon ourselves if we haven't given you a decent amount of feedback. If that's the way it's published, it's back on us. All right, super. Commissioner Friedgang and then Commissioner.
Yeah, I'm just going to make maybe a recommendation, and I'm happy to volunteer maybe to be sort of on our review team where you can access us. Or some of us quicker rather than wait for a commission meeting, and maybe if they're doing the development aspect of it, if we can provide quick fast feedback to you, that might help move this along a bit quicker, and then a final review each time or update formally with the commission. So,
and I think what I would invite commissioners maybe to connect with Anne-Marie and then just maybe the four of you. What's going to be easier for us as chairs if y'all just work together, put together, and throw it out as to say, okay, this is ready for prime time. This is your last chance. It's going as it is. And at the bottom of it, if we don't hear from you, or assuming you're okay with it, and then that's back on us. So that would be great. Thanks, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank
you. Commissioner Barnett.
Refresh my memory. We got a grant for this website.
No. We're actually doing it for
there. That's why.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Because I know I do two websites where I work, and it's not even, it just isn't, because there's so many eyes looking, but thank you so much. I really appreciated this, but I'm not the person who went to PhD or the undergrad. I'm the eighth grade level, not that I went to a little college, to read this. And I know many of our readers as well, so I just want you to be respectful of that as well.
Yeah, well, and one of the things I really wanted to kind of help you guys, or help all of you to help us understand the vision more, is, and I think kind of mentioned this, to have the logo to kind of have it throughout the site, but also, you know, when I don't know if this was discussed in earlier meetings that I wasn't involved with, but really what's the main thing that you want to communicate to women on that homepage? And then, you know, let's make that sentence, or just a sentence, and then, you know.
And the pictures.
Yep.
I'm going to, I apologize for this, I'm going to stay where you're at, but I'm going to take us off the agenda for just a moment to allow our senators to present on their top item topic, because one of them has to leave and they want to have that training. Commissioner Crick-Holder, can you hold on to your question and not forget it? Okay, great. I just don't want you to forget it. All righty. Senators. Thank you. Madam Chair, we apologize because I was sharing another meeting and then I have to go, but we do want to bring this idea, and please just, we're beyond excited, so it's sort of like grinding and the jumping, and we found the cure patients yet, but we're getting to actually finding a solution to some issues. So, you know, one of the questions we get as legislators and the representatives know this is, bring us, you know, things that we can measure that we accomplished.
Justify that commission suggestion.
So we need to do that. But we, you know, we can think of some issues that are very relevant to women. And obviously it has an impact on their economic stability. So we want to propose to the commission to get engaged beyond policy to a more hands-on project that we want to, that was Senator Henderson and we mentioned it to Representative Charlie Krause as well. We want to do this, and I think the commission is a perfect place to have the mechanism to bring people together. One, so call to action, convene people, and have and use really the opportunity we have to be in the state capital and have some resources available for that. So, Senator, do you want to just explain some of the thoughts we have?
Sure. So, after the public policy subcommittee meeting that we had the other day, and I've been thinking about something that's been on my mind a lot is, you may have seen this in the news, on social media, the Emily effect, the problems that we have in the state with postpartum depression, and the very tragic situation that happened in my Senate district with a really wonderful, wonderful family in our community, just a terrible tragedy. Where this young mother who had just given birth to her fifth child did not have the resources that she needed to be able to deal with the postpartum depression and really that got to an extreme level that she was suffering from. There just aren't resources. So I reached out to some of the legislators here that were at that subcommittee meeting
and just express that this is something that I'm going to be looking into and tackling to see what we as a state could and should do to increase access to mental health services for women postpartum. Because my sister is a certified nurse practitioner, and she said, we can do two things. We can write a prescription for antidepressants, or we can send them to the emergency room. That's it. And it's not enough. There's, she says to get into a therapist, it's many months wait. We need more nurse practitioners, for example, who have psychiatric training, but there are only a handful of them in the state of Utah. So, looking into what we can do as a state, funding-wise, policy-wise, to bring more awareness, and to actually, not just awareness, but to try to help solve this problem, because one in seven women in the state of Utah suffer from postpartum depression. It's the number one complication of childbirth, and suicide is the second leading cause of death for women between birth and 1 year of postpartum. It's the second leading cause of death, and it's a shame, and it is something that we as a state could and should probably look into seeing all of the different things that we need to do about that. And in the process of this, Senator Escamilla called me, and he mentioned this idea that she had heard about. I don't know where you heard about it, but...
Well, as you know, I had a baby 8 weeks ago, so I'm hypersensitive right now, baby safety and newborns, and one of the things that I keep on reading is data on SIDS, right? And it's the number one reason for babies 0 to 1 of death. And it can be preventable, a lot of those deaths. And one of the things I heard is there's a municipality in the state of New Jersey that is now distributing baby boxes. So baby boxes, because the number one reason why babies die is they suffocate. And many low-income poor families don't have a place to put their babies, they don't have a crib, they put them in bed with mom and dad, and a lot of tragic things happen there. And the baby boxes are designed with a mattress that's firm enough to keep the baby safe. And, you're looking at information that we got from your website, but we contacted them, so look at the price. Now cut that price by 80% or 90%. We can get in bulk those prices for the boxes at $12 a piece. On the basic one, and what we're trying to do here is really save lives. So imagine the stress of a mom with post-traumatic, with postpartum depression, and having to think of all the safety pieces of a newborn baby, and if they don't have resources to have a crib or a bassinet for their baby, they're not putting the baby in a safe place. And if we can provide those baby boxes, so I'm looking personally now, legislation-wise, we're both doing separate things, but we thought, why can't we just bring all of this together and have a call to action in Awareness Day, where we can bring different resources, bring volunteers. We do have a volunteer office also with the governor's office of Julie Fisher, who is executive director. I don't know what her department, they changed the name. We can have those places, not a conference, but an Awareness Day for women to know what resources are out there, and bring people that want to help, women that want to help other women, bring them together and, to contribute financially for some of these boxes until we figure out what state. Because if we provide, car seats for babies so they can be safe, they should also be able to, for low-income families that have no resources, have a safe place for a baby to sleep. I mean, that's the basic. So, that's what was an idea.
So this morning I talked to Deb Kofi with the Utah Refugee Center. We have a lot of refugees in our state. We've got a lot of immigrants in our state, even some women in the Native American populations, the rural communities that don't have maybe all of the resources that they should have, or have multiple children and not there's enough beds for everybody, or already have a baby in their crib when they have another baby. That happened to me once. And I had to figure out where to put this new baby. But I talked to her, and she was so excited about the prospects of this. This is something that is needed in the state of Utah. There aren't resources right now that deal with this. We've talked to women in clinics and in hospitals who say that this absolutely would be a big need for them in their in their setting. I've heard from labor and delivery nurses who said they've had to send babies home before wrapped in newspaper because they don't have blankets. So we have all of these people in our state who need something to do, right? They want to help, but they maybe don't know exactly how to help. And there are a lot of people who need help. And so this is maybe one small area that we could make a difference. People could even make, donate blankets and things to put inside these boxes. It's a cardboard box with handles cut out and a little mattress with a little seat covering. That's all it is. It's very inexpensive if we buy them in bulk or have them somehow donated. I think we can get a lot of people to get on board with this. The people that I've talked to so far in the healthcare community and in refugee help centers are very excited about the prospect of this. There's even an app for Utah Refugee Center called Serve Refugees, and it has, we could use that to try to bring people together, to try to get the word out and have a broad coalition of people who would be able to help in this effort. Anyway, I think it's Finland, I was going to point out Finland. So then looking into this a little bit more, Finland has been doing this for 70 plus years. In the 1930s, they had the highest infant mortality rate in the industrialized world. 65 babies out of every 1,000 babies were dying. And a lot of these babies were dying because they were suffocating and because they were co-sleeping. And so they started sending home, just for low-income women, they were starting to send home these baby boxes, and they put diapers, and they call them nappies, I guess, over there. Put them in there and sent them home with the mom, and then, you know, the government kind of took over and gave them to everybody. But there's a graph, an infant mortality rate in Finland has gone from 65 to every 1,000, and it's just, since they've been doing this, it's just plummeted, and it's now, it's like 2 or 3 per 1,000. So it's really saved a lot of lives, and anyway, something that Liz and I are really excited about and something that's very doable and necessary.
Yeah, and we can measure success by having all these women get educated initially. So if the commission can be, you know, the ones that are calling this, we can convene those resources, see and connect with the people that want to provide volunteers, hours, money. I mean, there is a way to do this, and it will be a way for the commission to be out there publicly to pushing for initiatives that are needed.
So maybe for those of you that are working on the website, I'll make note of this to, if Commissioner Fee would make a note to Commissioner Wallace on this,
sure.
Maybe this is one of the first things that we put as kind of a call of action, that once we get this put together, the state can contact with the senators here and if they move their initiative over. But I think this would be a phenomenal idea. And something that I think a number of women who might just have them a link on it that for some issues may not resonate, but something like this, if they can just, you know, if you give a $20 donation to help with the baby boxes or something like that, might be something, an initial thing to just kind of get excitement going forward, and then that would help if we do this in media, like you mentioned, a day, identifying a day in terms of postpartum health or something like that, or mother and child health or something like that, we could work into. Senator, also, I mentioned earlier when the YWCA was talking about some issues related to infant mortality, the Health Disparities Council has been doing a lot of work on this, so maybe we should write this initiative with that, with their work too, because of the work that they're doing within some of the ethnic minority communities to break down those infant mortality rates.
And it's a good opportunity too, to put information inside the box about, you know, putting the baby to sleep on the back in your room and a separate, not in your bed, and even postpartum depression.
And so that's where my brain went, is to have the information on resources for postpartum depression and what they can do and how they can reach out in the box.
Yep.
Okay, great. Super. Oh, yes. Commissioner Bonner. Oh, no, it's actually a third holder. Wait, let's go. Bonner's person then. Okay, sorry.
I want to thank you guys, senators, for bringing this issue forward. you mentioned refugees, and since the commission is under the Department of Workforce Services, we have a refugee office, services office, and we have partnered with Salt Lake Community College and Utah State University and created a refugee education training center in the Meadowbrook Salt Lake Community College campus, and they have large rooms there where they provide education and training materials and opportunities for refugees, and that might be a good place if you partner with us, and we can partner with them and put an event on there where those people already are centralizing.
Okay.
Great
synergy. Thank you. Commissioner Brookholder.
Thank you. I was going over Senator Henderson's comment about the resources available to women who have postpartum depression. And that made me think of other countries where there are programs, universal programs, for women who have given birth, and home visitors, skilled home visitors, who are not at the level of nurse practitioners, probably, although I'm actually not sure. I don't know enough about them, whether they're nurses or nurse practitioners or health workers, that actually visit new mothers in their homes for weeks to be sure they're okay, to answer their questions about safe sleeping, to talk about breastfeeding, to talk about depression, so that they can be linked with the resources they need. And we don't have that in this country, but we talked about community health workers earlier, and I think that I love this idea, as we think about the broader issues of postpartum depression, suicide, infant mortality, there may be broader approaches that we also want to think about that would be helpful supports for women who have just given birth.
Great. You know, my community health worker bill.
That's what we were talking about last earlier.
You
talked about that a bit too.
Yes. And it will come back.
But maybe this is the wedge that you push in related to maybe we start with this. It's instead of the whole broad-based community health workers, let's start with the moms and maybe do some pilot projects and something like that with the moms and put this piece together and all these other pieces together as a starting point, and then let's just see how beneficial it is to women who have just experienced the new birth of a child, you know, bring the health, the accountable care organizations, everybody to the table to say maybe there's a way that we can do this as the starting point. Because I think what it is a lack of understanding is too broad, and maybe we do this with the new moms, and this is a place to start that addresses all of these different challenges that we've identified.
Sure.
Any other points, Senators, that you want to bring up this morning?
Okay.
Thank you for letting us. And thank you, Maria and Sarah, for letting us defer on that. Let's return back to any other follow-up that you would like to
We're done. If you have any questions for us,
and then we'll go back to Commissioner Colbert for a question.
Thank you. Just one question. Did we not form a communications committee at some point? Is that active because
Commissioner Wallace is the chair of that, and I don't know how integrally involved other members of the committee are, but maybe I need to check on if there's issues additional assistance of new people to join the commission, that committee, that might be able to help her, because it might just be a bandwidth issue for her just like it is for us. But I know she's been working ardently with you and also with Commissioner Robinson, so I think where we're at right now, if we just want to be able to provide the best support for the commission, I mean that subcommittee, to work with you and then with us maybe a final sign-off. So, again, thank you so much. I know that you've been doing this, and I'm glad that Commissioner Barnett brought this up, that you've been doing this on your own time and trying not to frustrate, because we do really, really appreciate all the effort that you put into it. We're excited about what this is going to look like once we get it all together.
No frustration at all. We just want to get it out for you so that you have it.
Commissioner Barnett, you have one.
I offered to volunteer to be on this.
Okay.
The last teaching meeting that I haven't heard that.
Well, you can have with Commissioner Wallace then on that. Push yourself into the dialogue.
I will.
All right, super. Thank you.
Well, and one more point I just wanted to say. We do want to try to have the site live by July 1st.
Okay.
So it sounds like I'm going to be meeting with a few members, and they'll be driving the content, but I'll give my expertise on how to organize that content.
I think that's probably the best way to proceed, so that it does come from, you know, this good communication, but then giving my ideas on the website too. And then, you know, we'd have a final sign-off from everyone in the commission, and a formal sign-off. And so we'll kind of communicate that timeline, because I want to try to get as close as we can to that July 1st launch date.
Thank you. Thank you again for working with us. We do appreciate your input.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alrighty, let us get into subcommittee updates, and we'll count the website presentation as the communication subcommittee, because you, that has been, I believe, the priority for that committee as a subcommittee as present. I don't know Commissioner Burkholder or those of you that are sitting. I think Commissioner Friang, are you on the research committee also? Since Commissioner Burkholder, I mean Commissioner Robinson is not here, would either one of you be able to do a report on that, or do you feel comfortable, Commissioner Burkholder?
I would need to defer to Erin Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
Did that.
Oh, okay.
To supplement, I think Commissioner Friang attended that for the first time.
Okay.
So,
Erin, if you would come up, why don't you go ahead and just give us what you gathered from that last meeting and where we are at on that so far. I know that we've got some follow-up to do there related to funding and hiring there.
So the two main topics of conversation at the last meeting were just working through focus group questions. We really used most of the time to really utilize the folks here on the table to talk through the focus group questions, and I don't have that with me to provide much more detail other than that. And then I know the discussion around funding for the research was that we just, everyone was on board that the research needs to be done, but that the funding needs to be found, and that people were really concerned that that funding come, or that research be owned by the commission as opposed to any particular institution of higher education, that we really need to make sure that that result of the research comes from the commission, and that be a commission-owned product once that funding is found. So I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, I think that's fantastic. Yeah, the whole of it was just making sure it was representative of what was wanted and the original intent of what questions to ask for.
So, Commissioner Bonas, I talked to you briefly at the interim committee about what the process would be if we wanted to begin the RFP for hiring a research person. I know that there's an individual that has been identified, but I want to make sure that I think what probably would be most prudent, since it seems like time is of the essence. I got some threads, some fishing line out, some, what do you call them, hooks out for additional funding for research. But since we do have $25,000 for our use, do we know, was it discussed how much would be needed for this particular research project? So what are we looking at there?
It's in the minutes, I believe, and it's about 24, I think.
Okay.
On page 5 of the minutes, cost $24,000.
Mm-hmm. So, I think what would be helpful at this point, Commissioner Vaughn, is if we could figure out legally what that needs to look like in terms of issuing an RFP for, so that we're going through the process appropriately for being able to extend that money. So can you give us what your thoughts are on that?
Absolutely. So you mentioned there's just an individual already in line for, so we wouldn't be doing an RFP at that point. The purpose of an RFP is to open it up a bit to anyone who wants to apply, and then we would pick the most qualified candidate. So if we have someone already in mind, what we can do is instead of hiring them as a full staff or an employee, we hire them as a time-limited employee. So setting up a contract with them where they would work for a certain amount of time and you set the fee, and that way you don't have to go through the whole RFP process or a recruiting process for them to be a city or an employee of the state.
We did at some point want to, I mean, it's kind of a, we have very someone in mind, but we also want to possibly open the universe to others that might be interested in it, too. So what is the turnaround time if we were to do an RFP or to open it up more broadly?
Well, even if you did do a time-limited contract, you could do a process however you wanted to interview some individuals that you've selected and then pick which one, and then we just set up a contract versus going through a full hiring process where we have to send the job announcement out publicly and we're on our public website and just the HR website and then also internally. And that's just a whole big process. So you wouldn't have to do that. You could still find your selection however you want to go about that. And that would just be the easiest. Our
right, and I think that that's what our concern was. We wanted to avoid that, but we also wanted to stay in line since we're, you know, a state or organized commission, so that we're above reproach in terms of the process by which an individual is selected, or as we review the credentialing of that individual. Or if there are others that we gave a very, very small time frame of, okay, we're opening this discussion up for, you know, consideration of individuals to do this research. That'll also allow us, what would also be helpful is maybe putting it together, your office is associated with a memorandum of agreement related to the research and the deliverables is what I'm getting at, to assure that the deliverables are in the ownership of the commission versus any of the institutions that are involved with the research.
Okay.
Can you help us with that?
Yeah.
Would you mind? I just want to make sure. My biggest concern is we have wonderful institutions that are assisting us with this, but I want to get ahead of the possibility of any one of the institutions with this particular project saying, okay, we've given our institutional knowledge, which I want to honor that, but also make it that it's the commission's work. So.
So would this individual be contracting out with other research organizations, or are they, I guess maybe you can help me understand a little bit, because they'll be employees of BWS, and so whatever work product they produce would be
automatically considered as this.
So
okay.
So they set up an MOA or MOU, with that, because they would be hired by us.
So by default, it becomes the ownership of the state. Okay, all right, that's the main thing I just want to protect at this point.
But if he's going to be contracting outside to get, then we would set up MOUs with GWS and those outside entities. That's when we would set that up.
So one more assignment that I have for you then. If you wouldn't mind putting together this in an email, and that way then I can push that out to the subcommittee, the research subcommittee, for those of you that those are not here, and say this is what the process would look like for contracting with an individual that is the process that we need to undertake to engage their services, kind of what we need to put into that, and then have them take it from there.
Sure.
Does that sound good? Okay. All right. Super. Thank you. Thank you for the report. Yeah, because I don't want to delay the process because I know we want to get this rolling, but I also want to make sure that we're covering all our bases. So after the work is done, those expectations are there. People will know what we got, what we're getting, why we're getting it, and who's got it. So there we go. Super. Alrighty, I am going to turn over the time to my co-chair here and invite her to give us a report on our policy subcommittee the other day.
Great, thank you. So we had a policy subcommittee meeting 2 days ago, and we have looped a couple of new members into our public policy subcommittee, Erin Jensen with YWCA, who we've already met and is proving to be quite a valuable member of our larger Women in the Economy Commission family, and Paul Merrill, formerly of the Sutherland Institute, along with Senators and Commissioners Henderson, Escamilla, and Co-Chair Chavez Hauck and myself, we made up the Public Policy Subcommittee. We had discussions about the legislation from the 2016 session and the items that were going into interim study items for each of the different committees, and looked at those. There were probably 20 different bills. We discussed all of the ones that we were at least aware of that are interim study items, and tried to determine which ones of those made the most sense for us to sort of discuss and look at in terms of really pushing some policy and collaborating with either legislators or looking for others to sponsor
And these are the four areas of policy focus that we came up with, and it's interesting to hear the YWCA presentation this morning and see how nicely these sort of dovetail with the kinds of things that you're looking at as well. And I'm wondering if maybe we want to adjust our labels for our areas to kind of meet what yours are, because they definitely dovetail, and it would be nice to just kind of coordinate that, the labeling of these areas of focus. Anyway, just in general, quickly, we have four areas. One is workforce, which would include state barriers to regulation and licensing. We had a couple of bills this past year, as you're all aware. Senator Henderson with birthing centers and Senator Escamilla with the interior design. Those are both examples where the states created barriers for employment there. And there are probably other areas that we need to discuss. We're going to be reaching out to the Occupational Professional Licensure Review Committee that is chaired by Senator Wyler and Representative Green, and see if we could utilize some time of theirs during the interim to look at this issue, as well as State Auditor Duval. And so we'll be reaching out to both of those. The gender wage gap also fits under the area, our public policy focus on workforce. Second issue is education, and this includes both higher ed and K-12 partnerships with STEM. And we have an interest in looking a little deeper into Senator Milner's bill from this past session on strategic workforce, and looking at some ways that we can sort of support and enhance that. Third area is economic stability. This includes paid family leave. Representative Romero is working on this in conjunction with Representative Wilson. So we'll be hearing more about that. Second is caregivers and unpaid work, EITC for the state, and then also living wage. So those four sort of fall under economic stability. And then the fourth area is poverty. And, of course, all of these kind of have, they have intersections with each other. But in terms of poverty, we're looking at healthcare access and looking at, to the extent that women are underrepresented in the Medicaid expansion that we had this past session, that the groups that we're focusing on with Medicaid expansion have a disproportionate percentage of men that are included in those groups. So we need to have a continued discussion on how to meet the unmet needs of low-income women who were left out of the expansion we passed this past session, and then also coordination with the intergenerational poverty efforts, both in the Health and Human Services Interim Committee, looking at homelessness and the toxic stress specifically on children who are experiencing homelessness, and the brain development that is impacted by that experience, and then from an economic development and workforce services coordination with the IGP on that front, looking at access to capital and affordable housing. Of course, so those are our four policy areas we're looking at. We will continue to try and look at data to help us understand some of the specific populations that we have mentioned before, including women of color, rural women, women who are re-entering the workforce after an extended period away from working outside the home, and then veterans. And our third area that we discussed was our commitment to outreach to legislators who are working on these issues, so we can have some early coordination and have them present their legislation early enough in our commission that we can be part of the discussion in terms of supporting their efforts and also helping sort of nuance the pathway for their successful passage. So that's what I gleaned from our public policy subcommittee, and really feel quite enthusiastic about the work that we're engaged in. So thank you.
That's great energy.
Any thoughts or comments on some of the things that we identified initially as the public policy stuff? As you know, Commissioner Burkholder, a lot of that really just dovetails with the YWCA's efforts highlighting, and I think having Erin as part of our discussion group is going to help immensely on that. Commissioner Mullins also, you know, as we go through these things, at where you see the intersection with EWS and your efforts related to a number of your projects, IGT, et cetera, please help us be mindful of that so that we're identifying those and pulling those threads out. If you've got others, if you've got somebody that you would like to identify in your office, maybe to sit on our policy subcommittee, we would welcome that, either you yourself or in the interest of time, or somebody in your staff, just to make sure that we are aligning ourselves so that we can be of assistance to the department as you're doing those efforts. That would be, please know that we want to make that work and spread that through as best we can. So lots of work ahead of us, but I feel good about how we're in May already figuring out what this looks like in terms of moving forward with a policy directive augmented by the research and cascaded outward by our communications efforts. I feel better this year about kind of how we're really starting to pull all the threads together. We do need to work on finding one more commissioner for ourselves, and I think that's some work that you and I need to jump back into. We're missing one appointee that we need to fulfill. It is the larger than 500, whichever group that is. I have to look at the bill. We do have one more appointee we need to take care of because we're not as full as we should be. And then Commissioner Bonas, too, if you could work with me on trying to, I feel even though we might initially identify the expenditure of our $25,000 to move towards this research project, I'm still going to try to see what you can do about raising some more money. I really want to get an intern for this group. I think it would help all of the different subcommittees if we had that individual coming to them, meaning and helping us just administratively with a lot of that type of keeping track of stuff and notes and minutes and research and all of those things. That isn't specific to the research committee, but more just helping us keep track of everything. And what I'd love to do is move in the direction of finding an opening for fall semester. So, I mean, that means we need to probably get that word out at the end of July, beginning of August, so we can find someone. So let's see that I work on what needs to be done in terms of EWS helping us with that and the administrative functioning of what that looks like is what I'm looking at. So, any other business to come before the commission, look forward to having Shelley be our person to help us get a doodle poll going and get us all together for the end of June. As best we can, and again, welcome her to helping us, and thank Gail once again for all the work that she's provided and help she's provided for us. Are you retiring, or are you moving to another opportunity, or just,
I'm going to get
back to work. What are you looking for? Okay. Well, thank you for supporting us faithfully. I appreciate your time. Well, if there's no other business to come before the commission, I will say that we are adjourned unless there is opposition. And thank you all for your time and your efforts for getting us to where we're at.